Why am I so exhausted? How long will I feel this way? Why am I struggling to connect with others? Where do I go from here? What happens next? Welcome to Grief is the New Normal. I'm Dr. Heather Taylor, a grief specialist and licensed psychologist, here to help change the conversation about grief and build community and connection while we all adjust to this new normal we are living in. This podcast is for you if you are grieving or if you are supporting someone in a season of grief. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back, everyone, to our second episode. If you started listening last week, we kicked off this podcast with a discussion about what it means to lean into loss and how to invite others into our grief space. Now, this episode is part two of this four-part series. Today, we are talking about what it means to name and normalize grief. Now, if you like to know what the roadmap is, part three is a discussion about the process of grief, and part four is about the spectrum of grief. So let's get started. Today, we're going to name and normalize. So I think it's important to acknowledge the unexpected complexity of grief, right? Most often, it's characterized by feelings of sadness or longing. And for my grievers listening at home, you know it's so much more complicated than that. I think society wants to make grief feel small and minimize the impact of loss because then it can rush us back to engaging with the world the way we did pre-loss. Back to work after 3 days? Check. Oh, don't ask about it because it'll make them sad. Check. Offer to help that first week, but then, oop, don't follow up because maybe it'll set them back. Check. All these subtle things that reduce the complexity of what we are experiencing and avoid naming the loss. Now, I've witnessed firsthand the transformative power of acknowledging and embracing our grief. So let's begin by addressing the importance of naming our experiences of loss. As I often say with my clients, you can't tame it till you name it. So we have to say the thing, right? We have to voice the feelings, the pain. We have to say our loved one's name. Let me say that again. We have to say our loved one's name. Because while the world continues to swirl around us and move forward, our loved one isn't. Their name now exists in the world behind us, and it's our privilege and duty to help their name continue to live on. And it can feel like the world around us is forgetting who they are or avoiding saying their name because they don't want to make us sad. However, when we name our losses or when others ask us about our person, it helps validate our emotions and honor the significance of our person or people. It needs to be voiced to help us continue to move forward in a healthy way, bringing our loved one into that new normal, finding ways to say hello to them in new ways. I mean, I love when someone asks me about my person, when someone says their name, it grounds me. It makes me feel seen. It brings me joy that they're remembered by someone else. I think there's so much power there. And, you know, I think a really great example or a simple example of this is sending a text message. Naming our person or acknowledging the loss of someone else doesn't have to be complicated. Say you have a friend or a family member who lost a person. Just sending a text every now and then saying something as simple as, I was listening to the radio and heard Don't Stop Believin', and it made me think of your brother. Or I hope today is a peaceful day for you. I know this is the 1 month anniversary. Or thinking of you and your mom today. I miss her. Or I know you're missing, quote unquote, fill in the blank. I'm going to grab a coffee and I'd like to bring you one too. What time are you free? I think when our safe people send those messages, name our person, especially over time, it helps feel like the weight of remembering doesn't just fall on us. We aren't the only ones carrying that responsibility to remember them. The reason I'm focusing on what those supporting us in our grief can do to help with naming is that those first couple months, it can feel like you're drowning in grief, in the brain fog, in apathy, in overwhelm. you know, and it might feel too big or too much to reach out and say our person's name. So I'd like to empower those in a supportive role to help name our loved one when we don't have the bandwidth to do it ourselves. We're just feeling it. We're adjusting. We're living in it. We need those supportive people to remember to say the name, to offer the help, not just the, well, let me know what you need. Like, invite yourself into that space, kind of like what we were talking about last week. So the all-encompassingness of grief, the common reactions, that's the big part of what we're going to be focusing on for the rest of this episode. Because as I talked about at the start of the episode, grief is not as simple as society would like to make it. It's way more than just being sad. Now, let's dive into the various symptoms of grief that can manifest across the different dimensions of our life. There are six primary categories that I'm going to talk about today, and these are known as the common grief reactions, and they can fall into physical, emotional, mental, behavioral, social, relational, and existential or spiritual. Now, the symptoms I'm going to talk about today are not an all-inclusive or totally exhaustive list. So if I don't mention something, that doesn't mean it doesn't fall on the list. That's just, it, the list is too big and experiences are too varied to entirely capture them all, right? So there, of course, can be a variety. My intention in bringing these to light is that it helps to normalize the bigger ripples, the bigger impact that grief can have on our personhood. Now, if you are a visual person like me, I included a handout in the notes section of this episode that has a general overview of common grief reactions. It's my little freebie gift to you guys. So be sure to download and check that out. I think it can be a really validating and helpful tool, and I'll talk about it a little more near the end of the episode as well. So let's start with the physical. Physically, grief can manifest as fatigue, exhaustion, low energy, changes in appetite, overeating, undereating, sleep changes, too much sleep, can't fall asleep, and even physical pain. We can experience muscle aches or clumsiness. I can't tell you the amount of times I've had a client share about being surprised by the amount of random bruises they have. That clumsiness in those first few months literally can leave an impact from the brain fog, right? We can have a stronger somatic reaction to things with like tightness in our chests or throat pressure. Also, nausea or stomach discomfort can increase. Kiddos can really experience a lot of those somatic reactions frequently for that first year. Their body is just physically responding to the complicated emotions that come with loss and fear of what it means for them. And our bodies have to process these grief changes. And so some stronger somatic reactions and responses is pretty common. The last thing I'll mention about physical reactions is an increase in sensory sensitivities. Loud noise, bright lights, touch. We can feel more overwhelmed and sensitive to those sensory experiences as we acclimate to this new normal we're existing in. Our bodies physically respond to the emotional turmoil of loss, reminding us of that interconnectedness of that of mind and body, right? Moving on, the next category is emotions. So emotionally, grief encompasses a wide range of feelings, from sadness and anger to guilt and confusion. It's essential to recognize that there's no right or wrong way to feel grief. Each emotion is a natural response to loss. There can be shock, numbness, emptiness. There can be loneliness or yearning. Anger can feel really productive in a way. You know, thinking about anger, we associate it with hot, with red, with movement. Some people find anger a more comfortable emotion to sit in than the sadness. So they lean into that anger space because the productivity of anger feels better than the stillness of sadness. There can be resentment or irritability, having that shorter fuse because you're emotionally tapped out. There can be guilt, regret, or even relief. These can be more of the tricky emotions coming out of grief, the guilt of surviving, feeling like you could have done more or done different, guilt or regret about how things were left between you and your person, or things left unsaid, or those missed opportunities. Relief can be really complicated too, because that relief can feel like, oh, they aren't suffering anymore, or that you aren't having to be the caregiver. And, you know, those can feel like they're competing with or invalidating the sadness because, well, I'm relieved. So really, it's not necessarily emotions are competing or invalidating each other. It's really this both and situation, right? You can be both relieved that they aren't in pain and sad that they aren't physically here with you anymore. There can be fear or anxiety or insecurity, which can be applied to a variety of things, right? Fear about our own mortality, fear about what's going to happen next, anxiety about what it means for our future. And one can also feel helplessness or even out of control, like just overwhelmed, freaking out, that out of control, inner turmoil sense. Moving into the more mental impacts of grief, it can cloud our thoughts, making it difficult to concentrate or make decisions. There can be denial or disorientation. Things can seem confusing or overwhelming. There can be low motivation to adult or kid or to do the tasks that we need to do each day. Early in loss, there can seem like this myriad mountain of paperwork that never ends and so many decisions to make that we just feel burnt out and decision fatigued. A major contributor to our mental state after a loss is brain fog. We forget why we walked into a room. We lose track of tasks we need to accomplish or time spent on one activity. We struggle to make it to appointments, remember to feed ourselves or even others. It's as though those first, you know, really 4 to 6 weeks at minimum, it can last longer, but definitely at minimum, we're lost in the fog, trying to make sense of this new normal we are existing in. Our brains are struggling to process and orient to this new space, kind of like we have vertigo, right? And haven't figured out our new equilibrium, our new balance, and how to move through this world, you know, being able to just walk forward in a straight line, but we're just really out of balance. We may find ourselves lost in memories or preoccupied with thoughts of our loved one, or even just a strong desire to tell the story. There's so much power in narrative, and to help make sense of it, sometimes we have to retell that story over and over again. This can be where journaling can be really helpful, or vlogging, you know, just as you're able to talk through, it helps process and make it seem more real and more in this new normal. It doesn't necessarily feel good. It helps us kind of acclimate to this different space we're in, right? And then when I think about grief behaviorally, it can impact our daily routines and habits. We may have an increase in crying behaviors. We may carry mementos or wear their clothing. Like, you know, I know some people find comfort in wearing sweatshirts or coats because it carries our loved one's smell, or a piece of jewelry. You know, for me, I still wear my grandma's bracelet. Our family had the opportunity to have a replica made of this very signature bracelet that she always wore. I mean, I still wear that just as in memory of her, and it brings me comfort. You know, you may look at photos or pictures almost like you can't take in enough of them. Some people find comfort in making or keeping an altar, just having that touchstone in your home where it's that daily reminder of honoring them and thinking of them. We may lean into keeping busy to avoid feeling like, you know, avoid feeling, period. We'd rather get swept back up into work or the busyness of life because it's too hard or painful or complicated, feeling the feelings of grief. And we need that busyness to cope. Some people just need to avoid grief activating situations until they're ready to be in that space. So, you know, this happens with kiddos sometimes where like they don't want to go to the funeral or the memorial. They don't want to go back to the house or in a certain room, or they don't want to play a certain sport because, you know, that's when they found out about their person passing. So there can be avoidance of grief activating situations. You know, I think at this point, can we just name again, like how complicated grief can feel, right? And the variety of ways it can impact us behaviorally. With regard to social and relational, you know, grief can really strain our connections with others. We might end up isolating or withdrawing from people because it feels like friends and family may struggle to understand our grief, or we just feel like no one gets us. Sometimes that can happen in family systems or friend circles, is the griever ends up hiding or holding in their grief. So I see this a lot in families where, say, the family system lost one of the caregivers and the remaining adult is sad and grieving, of course, and the kiddo doesn't want to make that adult feel worse. So they hold it in or hide their grief because, you know, that person might have been having an okay moment and they didn't want to share about how they were feeling because they didn't want to bring them back down. And that can result in those hiding type behaviors. And sometimes it can even happen where remaining family members can get stuck in their grief and they're not able to make space for those around them to process it. And we feel like we have to keep it in because their grief is taking up all the space. And that can be really hard too. I think it's important to understand and be aware of our own capacity when grieving and how much or how little we might have for those around us. Another piece to consider is that when we experience a death-related loss or even the loss of a relationship, we might have a hard time relating to old friends or those not in a season of grief. I tend to call this limited BS tolerance with my clients. You know, they're in this space of post-traumatic growth and it can leave some aspects of life feeling more trivial. Like, I just lost a parent and my friends are at school worried about what dress they're going to wear to prom. It can make someone feel more othered, more different, right? And so we just have that limited tolerance for those more surface level things. And that doesn't happen all the time. That just happens sometimes. Again, it depends situation. So one of the last things I'll mention with social changes is that with grief, it can lead to sometimes new roles or new responsibilities. There can be parentification where maybe an older kiddo has to step up and help around the home with other kids or with getting a job and finances or caretaking in a way because the remaining parent is just really struggling, or with older adults having role swaps. So like, my partner took care of the finances for 40 years, and now that's something I have to figure out in technology and navigating all that, figuring out these new roles. There can be so many changes per family, per friend group, depending on the loss and the shifts. You know, I worked with this one kiddo and they lost a sibling, which devastating. And the sibling they lost was the jokester in the family. And so they felt this pressure to take on that mantle of being the jokester in their family because that's what their sibling did. And so helping remind us that it's okay if we still just show up who we were. And if there's aspects of our loved ones we'd like to model, we can. We still get to just be us. Yeah. Lastly, we've hit 5 of the 6. So the sixth category we're going to talk about is existential and spiritual, right? Grief can definitely evoke those existential, spiritual type questions, especially about the nature of existence, the nature of afterlife, questions about God or a higher power. This can lead to strengthening or even affirming of one's spiritual beliefs in some people, or it can also swing the total other direction where people can feel even more doubt about a higher power. There can be questions about where the deceased is now. Can they see me, hear me? Can I talk to them? wondering if I'll ever see them again, looking for signs. And I think that that can be really cool. And for some people that brings comfort, some people don't believe in that. And that gets to be okay too. Again, it depends, right? It's what's going to bring you comfort. Another big piece that can result from grief is asking, what's my purpose now? You know, for me, when I experienced my loss about 14-ish years ago, I was applying to school to be a librarian. I was going to get my master's in library science. Well, I had my loss experience and was grieving deeply and really struggled to find a grief therapist who wouldn't try to put my grief in a box or make me watch these VHS tapes on grief or flat out just avoid speaking about my person. I was so mad and disappointed and curious. Like, this is a helping field. These trained clinicians didn't know how to help me, which just felt so weird. So they just wanted to move on and talk about other things or talk about depression, which, sure, I was depressed. And was it depression or was it grief? Which, that's a topic for another episode. So anyway, so I decided I was going to go back to school and become a grief therapist myself. I wanted to really learn what grief work looked like and spent the next 5 years really investing in the world of loss, trying to learn and equip myself to do better for my clients. And, you know, the interesting thing is these educational programs, the master's or doctorate programs, they don't actually offer classes on grief. Like, it could be smattered in here and there, but there's no intensive, intentional training on grief work. So I had to go outside of school and learn myself or make every project that I was having to present on about grief. So I was kind of the grief gal in my program, which was cool. I mean, that's what I wanted to do, but it's like, I really wanted to be able to equip myself to do better for my clients, do better compared to what I'd experienced. And that's, you know, that's really one of the missions of this podcast and the work that I do is how can we make grief therapy better, more accessible, normalizing, talking about our losses, our loved ones, without it being this taboo thing. All that to say, I think questions about purpose can really come from loss and influence how we decide to move forward. By naming and normalizing the symptoms of grief across these dimensions, we can feel empowered to navigate our mourning process with compassion and understanding for ourselves and others. Remembering that grief is not a sign of weakness, it's a testament to the depth of our love and connection. And when reflecting on these six categories, we can recognize that grief impacts our whole being, which then makes sense why we're exhausted as we're trying to navigate this new normal. This is something I like to encourage my clients to track, actually. So, reminder, check out the show notes. I've included a handout of these six categories. Again, remember, it's not totally exhaustive, but print it out. Hang it on your fridge. Notice where you are experiencing your grief today. Which category are you in? And then build in some self-care to support that part of you that feels the most activated today. And we're going to have a whole episode series just about self-care options for these six categories. So stay tuned for that in the coming weeks. There is plenty more to flesh out here. So thank you for joining me on this journey through the landscapes of grief. And I'll see you next time as we talk about the process of grief, those stages and types of loss we can experience. And I just really encourage you to remember to be kind to yourself today. You're doing a great job, and thanks for being here. I'll see you next time. Bye. Intro and exit music is provided by The Datacorns. Don't forget to check the episode notes section for your freebie handout on the six common grief reactions. If you're interested in working with me, please feel free to check out my website at griefisthenewnormal.com. Thank you for your time.